Moncrief on News Talk.
In the studio with us now, Dee Reddy and a vision in chartreuse, Declan Buckley. Yeah. Good afternoon to you both.
Happy New Year, Sean.
Yeah, we were just discussing your fabulous wardrobe.
My jumper. Lovely jumper.
Ironically, I just got my bill for the TV licence just today, so you're welcome.
I see what you did there. Thank you.
Yeah,
oh, that's
that.
The tone set then.
That's the tone, yes.
Right, so the colour is chartreuse, the tone is nasty.
Yeah. I went through a particularly difficult year emotionally due to my divorce from my husband of 7 years. I feel both an overwhelming desire for a fresh start and an underlying fear of disappointment. The idea of the new year offering a clean slate sounds appealing, but at the same time, I'm anxious about trying to reset everything and possibly feeling like I'm not meeting my own expectations. How do I manage hope for new beginnings with the fear of not being able to truly change or make progress? I'm worried that, despite the fresh start, I might fall into old habits or feel overwhelmed by trying to improve so many areas of my life. I have started dating again, which has been nice, but emotionally, I don't know if I'm ready. How can I approach the new year in a balanced way, focusing on meaningful growth without overloading myself or feeling pressure to completely reinvent myself? I'm not sure what they're asking.
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
It
There's
is.
There's a lot there. But
I think that's because they're going through a lot at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what, about this time of year, I think we're all a bit guilty sometimes of fetishizing the need for change rather than making changes at a time when it's right for you or you're ready to or you're in a position to do. And it sounds like the person who emailed that in has clearly had loads of change in the past year. So maybe the thing to do is not be looking... it's actually kind of reflect on those changes and what's made you happy, what's worked, what hasn't, and look ahead to next year and what position you'd like to be in then, rather than trying to force yourself to do anything about it now.
I think often the opposite to hope is kind of disappointment, and I think what this person is dealing with is a world where, you know, whether you're on social media or not, you know, we live in a world of comparisons and expectation. And we kind of want the best for us, which is completely normal. It's the right thing to do, is to have dreams and hopes and plans for the future, but as well as for now. But if you're coming from a past where things have gone wrong and your dreams have been kind of shattered, particularly like in this case where this person's coming out of a major relationship that didn't go the way that they expected. So naturally, they need to move on. Mm. So they kind of have that situation where change is required. But big changes are kind of the hopes and the dreams. They're the big, big plans. So you want to move, but you also want to go somewhere amazing and far away. But in order to get there, you got to take one step at a time. And I think that the problem here is that, and for many of us, as you said, at the beginning of a new year, we kind of make our big resolutions and our big plans. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And we always fail. And that's because we're making these massive plans and we're not doing...
I was going to say speak for yourself, but that would have been a lie.
Yeah. No, I don't make New Year's resolutions for that reason alone, is that... I know I'm a failure. That kind of like, why change a habit of a lifetime? But I think for this person coming out of their relationship, I think I can see elements of action and I can see elements of progress there. Like they're talking about, you know, they've gone on to the dating scene, but they don't feel that they're ready. Mm. That's good because, you know, they're initiating a change and they're registering that change and they're going, well, you know, slowly, it's going too fast. That's the perfect mindset to be in. So if that's what's going on for this person, I think that they're in a really good place. So you can conceive of the life that you want for yourself, but not be there, and that's okay. You know, you can have hopes and dreams of, I want to be this in the future. I want to be gorgeous by the end of next year. But maybe just focus on doing your nails this week.
And it's funny when you're saying about hopes and dreams and thinking of the future, because I remember reading a thing once about kind of the impact of a breakup of a long term relationship on your kind of your psychology and your neurology. And they describe it as being very, very difficult for your brain to process, because all of your hopes and dreams and the things that you might have imagined in the future now have to be reset to replace this person with the absence of that person. And I think that's an awful lot to be going through without trying to force more change on you just because of a calendar date.
And it's kind of an eat, pray, love thing she seems to kind of want to happen, where everything changes all at once rather than, you know, the first thing, I assume, is to get yourself well again after
softly rather than making any drastic decisions.
We're always said this thing where, you know, movies have the kind of big moment where everything changes and then everybody gets their happy ending. But real life happens a lot more slowly, or sometimes, you know, things happen concurrently, or, you know, things you don't notice the change and then suddenly, you know, the grief feels less or the pain feels less or whatever. It doesn't have to be this big magical.
Or you're excited to be dating again as opposed to terrified.
Because you should.
I think that's the thing, you know. So maybe take a little bit of the pressure off yourself, but also maybe go for the small wins. Recognize that, you know, even getting out of bed sometimes is a win. Getting your nails done. You know, I made that joke because sometimes go, oh, I'm going to be skinny by the end of 2025. When instead you just go, all you're really looking for is a little bit of that dopamine hit where you're kind of loving yourself instead of loathing yourself. And so make it easier for yourself to like yourself by making smaller plans that you can succeed in.
Achievable goals.
Yeah, that's really the way to do it, rather than these big, massive plans where you're almost going into it with the sense that you're going to buzz it up and it's going to be a, you know, carnage like the last time. You know, that narrative is kind of hard to, if as you said, Dee, that you can be in a situation where all your hopes and dreams have literally been dashed against the rocks and you're standing there going, how do I get out of this mess? Well, you know.
I just think it's okay to take stock sometimes instead of, you know, needing to.
Yeah.
To.
It's to change everything all of a sudden. Mm. Somebody says that woman needs to relax and chill. Well, there you go. That's that sorted
Netflix
out then. Yeah.
Netflix
and
chill.
That makes it easy then. Everyone can do that through pure will alone. I've been in a long-term relationship for several years. And while things started off really strong lately, I've been feeling a growing sense of dissatisfaction. My girlfriend and I have been through ups and downs, but I can't shake the feeling that we're not as connected as we used to be. We rarely communicate about anything meaningful, and intimacy has become more of a routine than something we both enjoy. I'm constantly questioning whether I'm staying because of habit or genuine love. How do I know if this is just a rough patch, or if my relationship is really at its end? Should I try to work through these feelings, or is it time to let go and move on? I don't want to make a decision I'll regret, but I also don't want to waste more time if it's not going anywhere. My mother has told me that it's normal to have doubts, but when I look at her and my father's relationship, I don't feel overly enthused. How do I navigate these conflicting emotions?
Yeah, this reminds me of the last one as much as it could be them
a year ago.
Yeah, or even a year in the future where they're kind of going, you know, it's all about the big aspirations for life versus the dirty, hard compromises of real life, you know, activity and real life response relationships. Because, you know, we can all have the fairy tale in your head, but actual real relationships, even very committed, happy, loving relationships still require effort and work, and it's not all just easy. And sometimes you don't want to talk to the person that you've been living with for the last 50 years. You just want, you know, it's normal to kind of go through phases of whatever. I think the danger is if you see a phase or just, you know, like a moment as being indicative of the state of the relationship as a whole. And I think that sometimes is what people can be very quick to bail when things become a little bit difficult. I think that's never going to result in security in what you're doing as a relationship. Because if you know that you've given it everything to kind of make it work for you and the other person, then you know when it comes to an end, you know. Whereas this person seems to be in this kind of insipid, I don't know what a relationship is even meant to be kind of thing.
And also, like, they're saying they don't communicate about anything meaningful, but sure, try. about, to have this conversation. Well, maybe not this conversation, but like, I think there is a thing where at the start of a relationship, even the most mundane things or routines are actually really romantic,
you
just
like
because you're doing them
too?
Together.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. This becomes our thing. And then naturally, over time, as things do become routine and it's not novel, sometimes you can get in your own head a bit much about that. But there's some of the most successful relationships I know are people who, as you say, Declan, put the work in or, you know, aren't always, you know, completely buzzing from the romance of it all, but actually, you know.
I think highs and lows are kind of normal. And I think, you can be in, you know, even in the space of a day, you can have, you know, highs and lows in a relationship. Because otherwise, you're in this kind of weird Stepford Wives scenario of this kind of perceived perfection, or you're in the kind of, you know, it's just really bad and horrible. And, you know, obviously neither of those relationships are healthy, good relationships, but in one of them it's very clear you need to get out. Whereas in the one where it's kind of up and downing, I'm not suggesting you put up with terrible
boring
stuff.
Like,
yeah, boring is sometimes okay.
Honestly, you're probably never going to have a particularly long-term relationship if you can't get through that part.
There's also kind of a, when I look at my parents' relationship, I don't feel overly enthused. That's a bit of an arrogant statement in a way, in that you're looking at a couple who've been together probably for decades. They know each other far better than you're ever going to know.
And you will never know their personal connection or the meaningful conversations they might have when you're not around.
Or they don't, because they've had them all, they don't need to have any more. Mm. They can just like not hit each other.
Or what's meaningful
what
to them.
Yeah.
And you can know somebody. You can know somebody really, really well, and you, and the connection that you have for that other person doesn't need to be about a conversation that you're having with them. You can have intensely loving thoughts about somebody, you know, and stuff that about them makes you feel good, and they're actually not even in the room. And they're not even having a conversation with you. So I think that sometimes relationships, you know, it takes a long time to get to a bit where you're really kind of enmeshed with somebody, and you're in that kind of. It's the kind of the true love part as opposed to the infatuation or the kind of high romance part.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people confuse what those things are.
Or what they should be.
Yeah.
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 Because it works differently for different people.
Yeah, but I suppose if you say to someone and they're relatively young and they're still in the, you know, bonking all the time, highly romantic phase, and you go, well, in a few years' time, it's going to be like your parents' relationships. And they go, oh, no, really?
Or they'll scoff and go, that'll never happen to us.
But
you do hear people going, oh, I'm a really passionate person and I need to have, you know, the drama. Therefore,
and
they have drama in their life.
I was just going to say, usually a bang a high drama.
Exactly. Who wants to live with that?
You know, they're not particularly known for having long-standing relationships because, you know, drama doesn't tend to leave. You can't sustain it. It's not sustainable. Whereas a little bit of...
Or it's exhausting to be around it.
Yeah. You don't want that. Nobody wants that. Did you get your car fixed and everything, by the way?
Yeah, so...
Going back to a drama or a humdrum drama?
It was because I said exhausting to be around
you. No, I didn't mean that. Because I thought that was a humdrum couple thing because he went and sorted it out for you.
And it was actually so lovely because I had checked, I think he'd heard me saying on air, oh no, I've blown out the tyre. I think I was only outside, and the car wasn't clamped, by the way, and I was only outside for about 10 minutes and then he got there and he fixed it. And then he went off into town and off I went. It was really, really nice.
Okay, lovely. Yeah, so it was just there waiting for you.
And it was very mundane and very routine, but
that's love.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. 100%. I've recently started a new job that I was very excited about, but now that I'm in it, I feel incredibly out of place and overwhelmed. The pace is fast, the expectations are high, and I often feel like I'm barely keeping up. The job is what I always wanted, and I went to college for years to get where I am now, which I am proud of. At the start, it was great, but as the months went on, people left the company, which has left me with more work. To be honest, I feel like I've been thrown to the wolves. I don't want to quit, but I feel like I'm drowning, and it's affecting my mental health. I barely have a social life anymore, and I've gotten into the habit of drinking wine in the evenings to manage the stress. How can I manage the pressure of the new role without burning out? I really wanted to succeed in this position, but I'm struggling with the transition. Welcome to work.
Yeah. There's a kind of certain amount of expectation versus reality there to that, I think. But also, like, how recent was this? If, like, how recently could they have started the job if it's already had such a big toll, or so many people have left. I'm assuming
what happened is that, let's say, they came into the job a few months ago, and then
sure,
this person has had to fill in for others because they're, you know, there's a staff shortage.
Yeah, I think they mean a new role in the same
organization. Gotcha.
Yeah,
okay, that makes sense.
That's how I interpret it. And I think what they're really saying is that, you know, this new role has brought new levels of responsibility, and the transition also means that they're in a situation where they've gone from feeling relatively confident and competent to a situation where they're new and they're making choices and decisions that they're uncertain about. And all of that is feeding into a sense of kind of the imposter syndrome vibe, which is very normal when you go to a new role, into a new situation, especially one that has a lot of responsibilities. And when your kind of your old support structure kind of disappears, whether they literally are leaving the organization or they're in a different room. I think, look, these transitions are transitions, and it will end. And, you know, this is like the situation I referred to earlier on, where suddenly one day you wake up and you're skinny.
Suddenly one day you wake up and you know it's exactly like, how to do
you know,
what
you're like,
meant
wow,
to be doing.
I didn't wake up this morning with sweaty, clammy hands going, I don't want to go to work today. I mean, that may never come, because maybe, you know, the new era, the new role that this person is in is senior management or something, and suddenly they're in that level of responsibility where it's just, you know, they're always on. They don't get to clock out. Because some people are like that, and that's just that's where their job puts them, and that's what their lives are like, and they can't ever kind of switch off. And for me, I'd hate to be in that kind of situation.
I guess it depends as well what the role is, because like some jobs, some industries get much busier towards the end of the year, and it could be that the pace may be a bit, look a bit different or feel a bit different come the new year. And there may well be more scope to hire rather than just before Christmas.
But this person sounds a little bit crisis-y, though. Mm. That you know, they had gone to college for a long time to get this job, and then all of a sudden it's like, it sounds like there's actually perhaps there's more work involved than they had expected.
I don't know.
And more responsibility and pressure than they'd expected.
I think in the end of the day, though, you know, the world is full of life is full of like opportunities that you can handle and ones that you can't. And sometimes you go, I want to be a pop star.
A Spice Girl. Yes.
And then sadly, I could sing and I have rhythm and dance. No, but I mean, you know, what I'm trying to say is that you can train to do something, whether it's in sport or in work scenarios, and you don't ever achieve your dream. But working slowly towards it, you'll find a place where you're comfortable. And look, they've gotten this promotion. They're in this new role. They're just getting their head around it. I genuinely believe that for them, this transition phase is a phase. And they'll end up in a situation where they'll go one day, oh, do you know what? This is manageable. Maybe there'll always be an element of stress. That's what I was referring to a second ago, is that some jobs is always this kind of, you know, urgency, or you're always firefighting or something, because that's kind of what some roles are. And that's nothing to do with your qualifications. That's the role. That's the kind of person they want, is a managerial type firefighter person. And some people go, you know what? I thought I'd like this. It's not for me. And it's perfectly fine to go, I'm not doing this anymore, and then you know, leave or change. But at the moment, I think what it is I would say, hold your counsel, give it time. You're only new there, let it happen. And if it is actually an external organizational issue, like you're not being supported, then you need to tell whoever gave you the job that you're not being supported.
There is also the thing, though, I think, because they do say that they feel like they've been thrown to the wolves. Mm. And I mean, that happens to people in the workplace all the time. So in taking stock of it, it's probably no harm to look at whether that's a feeling or a reality. Because
that may be why the other ones are leaving.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, well, it could be. No, I mean,
But also, if it's affecting, they say, their mental health, their amount they're drinking, and their social life, then, you know, maybe you don't actually enjoy this. Maybe it's not what it was cracked up to be, or you're working for the wrong organisation.
Look, work is never cracked up to what
it was. Well, no, in general, it's not.
In general, it's not. That's why we're doing this.
There could be an element of they were sold.
The real hard graft.
They were sold a pup here.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Oh, this is his job and it's going to be great. There's going to be a team around you. Oh, no, they're all left. Sorry, bye. On your own now.
And also, like, maybe you've been overperforming because you haven't been telling people that it's too much or whatever. So they just keep adding stuff to the plate.
Yeah.
But there were lots
of... who wants to go to their boss and say, sorry, this is all too much for me now? Mm. Especially if they've just started this job.
I think, though, that a boss or an organisation has a responsibility to help an employee to deal with at least the transition phase of getting their grips with the new role. It's completely normal and completely professional to go and say, I don't feel like I'm being kind of, you know, assisted on this, you know, at least through the transitionary phase. If they're finding that they're not able to handle a job on a bigger level on an ongoing basis, well, that's something they can talk to somebody about. Because if that's what it's going to be like, and that's the way they feel about it, then it's going to be a scenario where they're either going to go, help me, or I'm leaving. Because, you know, you're not going to stay there, you know.
But that's kind of what I meant about the throwing to the wolves thing. Like, unless they interrogate that and figure out if it is them or... It's not us, it's you.
Yeah.
No, but like, that's a big difference, because if you have been thrown to the wolves and you're not being facilitated to do the role that you've been given, then actually you are better off going to your boss and.
Yeah, no, to put my cynical hat on, as you know, I'm not like that at all. I'm a dizzy idealist. HR departments aren't there to help people. Yeah. HR departments are there to protect the company.
Yes.
And then ultimately, if this person goes and said, this is all a bit too much, they're going to go, why? What's wrong with you?
Of course.
No, but that's what I mean.
And it would be framed in the nice, most passive-aggressive way and lovey-dovey way. But at the end of the day, I'll bet you what would happen is that that person will be left feeling like they failed.
Yeah, fair. Okay.
Because no manager is ever going to say, sorry, I screwed this one
up.
But
there's
a
difference between manager and HR as well.
HR is there to protect managers.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it's for.
There are often, though, organisations that go through phases of, like, that's why I was saying, when I mentioned how everybody's leaving, why are they leaving? And sometimes organisations go through this lean phase where either there's something happening within the organisation that's making people, you know, desert the ship like rats, or there's something happening broader in terms of resources where they actually just can't give the resources to support their staff. In all of those situations, what HR does or what organisations want to do is they want to make the employees absorb that particular lack.
Yeah.
In other words, they kind of go, well, if I can get our current employees to kind of stretch themselves and absorb that stress to get us through the phase, then that's great and we'll get there. But, you know, you need to sometimes push back as an individual to say, I'm not willing to sustain this particular strain, because why would you?
Why would you?
If there were other alternatives, if there were other jobs to go to, then you could just dump your job and leave.
Somebody's just texting to say, I'm at work at the moment. We have a couple of young women working in my department temporarily today. The two of these women haven't stopped talking all day. It's like a wall of sound constantly there. I would like to tell them to just shut it, but that would be perceived as over the top. Well,
it would be over the top.
Your employer has a responsibility to you for you not to have to listen to stuff like that. I've been dealing with a lot of family tension lately, especially around the Christmas. My parents and I have always had a complicated relationship, but this year it feels worse than ever. They criticise my life choices, my career path, even my personal relationships. And every time I try to stand up for myself or explain my point of view, they shut me down or make me feel guilty for not appreciating everything they've done for me. I've tried to set boundaries in the past, but it always feels like they ignore them, and I end up feeling emotionally drained and resentful. I don't want to lose my family, but I also can't keep sacrificing my mental health to maintain these strained relationships. Most of the criticism comes from my father. I feel like he's always been ashamed of me because I didn't go to college and I work a menial job. My mother supports me silently, but will never stand up to him. How do I assert myself with my parents without feeling I'm being disrespectful? And how can I protect my emotional well-being without cutting them out completely, even if I feel like they're constantly undermining my sense of self? Jeannie Mac.
Yeah. There's a lot in there. I think in this instance here, this person said a couple of things that kind of confused me. If you've set a boundary and somebody else has not acknowledged or they've ignored that boundary, then you actually haven't set a boundary at all. You've just kind of thought about it, or you've imagined a boundary. And I think as well, often with family, we have these, we deal a lot in the unsaid, or we deal a lot in the kind of conflict avoidance. especially with your parents, because you might have residual notions that it's rude to speak back to your parents, or some of that. So you don't, you know, a lot of that is about asserting yourself as an adult in a family relationship is not the same as maintaining family hierarchy kind of relationships. And that can be a bit difficult to get your head around. But,
yeah.
But it's part of growing older that you realise that those things kind of inevitably have to change. Your parents aren't always going to be the kind of authority figures that get to tell you.
And they don't necessarily have the right to be.
Correct.
Yeah.
And from that point of view, I would say, look, self-knowledge is the answer here. You have to know what it is you actually want, and letting your parents decide these things for you, even kind of tacitly or subconsciously, is not going to ever stand to you. You have to take the reins of the horse here and own your own decisions and your own choices. And maybe verbalise them as well. Say it to your dad, you know, because the underlying point here is that your dad has these thoughts that he's probably never verbalised, that this guy is imagining or is just allowing to guide his life in some way. That's nonsense. So you have to, you know, part of your boundary has to be, these are my choices I've made, Dad. Saying it out loud, regardless of how he responds. You've said that's the boundary.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you want to establish a boundary, you have to accept that you're not going to be able to change somebody else's behaviour. You can only change how you respond to it or your own behaviour. So I think that's a big part of that there. And then to your point about, you know, trying to navigate it as an adult as opposed to a child. I think sometimes really good advice for, you know, older family in terms of how to respond to it is just, like, don't lead with the emotion. Don't, like, respond with how it makes you feel. Maybe just take a pause and think about how you would respond to another adult who said that to you, who you had no familial relationship with, and see if there is a middle ground there or if that is the approach that you should be taking to kind of get the shutters down. The shutters down,
Because often in family stuff, we kind of bring in the, you know, we don't want to create a fuss, or we don't want to be disrespectful, or whatever it is, or we don't want somebody to hate us, because the consequences are often bigger. Because if you have a row with a family member, you know, if you have a row with a stranger on the street, you can just walk away and never have to deal with them ever again. Whereas a family member, hopefully, you have to.
Hopefully, unless
not this town.
Turns out they moved in next door. Just going back to the person who feels they were thrown to the wolves at work. Personnel department stopped supporting employees once they changed their name to HR departments. It happened in the 90s. I'm in management for years, spent my life putting out fires. And someone else says, I got thrown to the wolves every day in my former job. Now I work for the HSE. I would imagine that's a criticism-free job, absolutely.
Or they rang in sick today. I'm not sure.
Hope you get well soon. Declan Dee, thank you both very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.